it's like, oh, we don't keep our stuff here. And it cuts immediately to them in the van. And she's like, we hide it.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Also, I got you a present.
No! Mm-hmm. I haven't had time to get you one.
It's my body. In a sexual situation.
Hello, everybody. It's Recotopia episode 35. And yeah, I've got a Leprechaun steelbook with seven movies from the Leprechaun series. No big whoop.
That'll be important later.
No, it won't. It won't be important at all. Forget you heard that. I'm Chris Atkinson.
I'm Jeremy Scott. I'm still laughing about the leprechaun.
Today, the big recommend is going to be Spontaneous. I had a weird experience watching this movie. Like, this is a weird, like, thing. Like, I think Spontaneous was free on Prime a long time ago. And then I realized I had to rent it because it's apparently Real Good said it was on Paramount Plus, but it's not. And then I was like typing it in and they're like, what do you want? You want NCIS? I've got NCIS for you. But then I bought Spontaneous and it took me straight to the credits where I had cut it off the last time I watched it.
Oh, wow.
So like, wow. That was a weird thing. I know we I saw remember it for free the, first time.
We remember where you were, but we're going to make you pay to get back to that point in the credits again. That's wild.
Anyway, how is everybody doing today in the chat? People watching us on a Tuesday before this gets released. And man, everybody is just hammering the comments today. I even saw a comment from JC Davis saying, do you think the Titans have pulled it together? No, they have not pulled it together. They don't look very good. And they're 3-2 and they may even win the division, but they look like shit.
This is a spicy show already.
It is a spicy show already, but glad to see everybody here, and can't wait to get into it. Do you have any recommends? Some small recommends, Jeremy?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
I do. The one that I'm going to start with is a movie called Logan Lucky.
Ooh, yes.
2017.
I'm so happy you finally saw this.
Oh, man, I'm too. This is one of those movies that Chris has recommended to me, but I have just never gotten around to watching. And then the way that my life cycle works, sometimes a movie will just come back onto the library of HBO or Showtime or something, and it'll be constantly playing. Mm-hmm. And so now I've seen Logan Lucky like 2.5 times in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. This movie's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is playing a little bit against type to a certain degree. It's about a heist at a NASCAR race that requires one man to get himself put in prison so he can recruit James Bond to help break out of prison to pull off the heist, then break back into prison so as to look completely innocent of the heist.
Yes.
This is Soderbergh doing Ocean's 11 in the Mid-South, basically. And just like those movies, it has no interest in explaining to you at the time what the heist is completely about. Mm-hmm. It's one of these things that you always know, I'm going to catch up to this a little bit further down the road. There's always something going on that you're not aware of that comes back in a reveal later. It's a very ridiculously convoluted heist that is still somehow almost believable, at least in some regards. Channing Tatum is in this. Let me pull this up. Oh, I don't have it up. Anyway, the cast is great. I'm blanking on all the names.
Yeah, you have Adam Riley, Driver, Channing Tatum, Adam Daniel Driver. Craig, Hilary Swank, Riley Keough. Yeah.
It's just really quirky, fun, unexpected, and it's just Soderbergh in his wheelhouse.
I think there's a surprise Katie Holmes in this, too.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Surprise Katie Holmes. Mm-hmm. Sudden Wes Bentley.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, if you, like me, had missed this movie and had been holding off or whatever reason, find it, watch it. It's really good. It's a really fun time. It's breezy. You'll want to go back to it again and again.
All right. Cool.
Logan, lucky.
Yeah, I would second this recommend. I loved this movie. All right. So I've been trying to watch some of these horror movies for October. I saw the sequel to VHS, VHS 2 to be exact. The first VHS was fun. You'll look at the IMDb on these. Look, when you go and look at horror movies, you're typically going to get very low ratings. And that's a definite phenomenon going on with the IMDb and ratings. So like you see something that's like 5 point something, that's like a 7 point something if you like horror movies. But the first VHS was a lot of fun, and this one I think is maybe better than the original. It's got segments directed by Adam Wingard and Eduardo Sanchez from the Blair Witch Project, and Gareth Evans is on this as well, along with Simon Barrett. Some pretty well-known commodities, and there are, this is just like the original VHS where somebody goes into a room and there's a whole bunch of TVs with like the static on it and everything and like tapes everywhere, and people are popping in the tapes and they're watching these tapes that appear to be snuff films of some sort, but you know, there's always this kind of, you know, supernatural to it or whatever. And this one goes through a variety of different kinds of horror things. There's one that's just a walk, like somebody just taking a bike ride through a park, and then sudden zombies are everywhere. There's another one where the parents have left a house, and the kids are left alone at the house, and this alien invasion happens while they're there. The centerpiece of VHS 2 though is the Gareth Evans section of it. I will warn you that this does have your trigger in it, although they do kind of like put some static over the video when these things happen. It's not super graphic, but the episode that Gareth Evans directs is graphic. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of blood and gore in this one, but the Gareth Evans one is about a cult. These reporters want to talk to this religious institution that they believe is a cult, and the cult leader is going to allow them inside the grounds to film all this stuff. Of course, when the documentary film crew gets there, they find out that they're going to be part of the proceedings more than they're actually going to be able to shoot an actual documentary or anything. And things get fucked up fast in that one. So VHS 2 is really fun if you like the first VHS. If you like anthology type of horror movies where it's just, you know, very quick segments all the way through, I think you would like this one. And you get to see some pretty cool directors do their thing for some shorts and everything. And this movie's got some good stuff in it. I would highly recommend.
I do believe, and Patrick is saying they just made VHS 99. I don't know if that's what it's called, but there's like a new VHS anthology either out now or coming in the next couple of weeks. I guess if you like those movies, there's more.
He says, I think the next installment of VHS will be called DVD. Maybe.
Yeah. The thing with him is you can't ever tell if he's being serious.
That's true. Well, if they did want to do it that way, they'd put the slashes through it. The D slash V slash D.
Yes. Mm-hmm. D slash. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go off book. Sorry to our producer. My second small recommend is a movie from the mid-90s that my buddy Josh and I fell in love with called Beautiful Girls.
Yeah.
this has a great cast.
It does.
You've got Matt Dillon, Timothy Hutton, Noah Emmerich, Annabeth Gish, Lauren Holly, Rosie O'Donnell, Martha Plimpton, Michael Rapaport, Uma Thurman, Mira Sorvino, and Natalie Portman in a role that if you have not seen this movie, if you ever do, you'll realize why she's a star.
Mm-hmm.
She steals this completely. She plays a young teenage girl who lives next door. Timothy Hutton's a piano player from the big city, and he comes home to this small town, and I think it's around Christmas time. He's just really unhappy with his life in general. He's kind of blasé about everything. And the visit just ultimately rejuvenates him to want to grow up and be an adult and get back to living life. But before he gets there, he meets young Natalie Portman, the next-door neighbor at his old house, and kind of starts to fall for her a little bit.
Yeah,
the movie doesn't shy away from it.
I would say, yeah, it toes the line.
Yeah,
but I think it also recognizes that there are people like Timothy Hutton who realize that there's no future there.
Yeah,
but wishes they could be younger. You know, could be a younger person. That kind of thing it's hazy, right? So
Well, I mean, one of his friends even calls him out and says, dude, she was a zygote.
It was one of the
when you were, you know, graduating high
Noah
school
Emmerich
or whatever.
Says that to him. It's so funny.
All of his friends have their own dramas going on, whether it's cheating on their spouses or wanting an ex-girlfriend back. Rosie O'Donnell plays this wisecracking member of the group who just serves acerbic commentary on everybody else's lives around her.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really, really solid ensemble piece about friendship and love and life. And it will either make you love or hate a particular Neil Diamond song. It made me love it.
I loved it. Yeah, because of this.
They sing Sweet Caroline in this a bunch. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if you've never checked it out, and you come across it, let's see if it's anywhere. Oh, hey, you can watch it on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, Ted Demme directed that movie, and brother of Jonathan Demme. Neither of them are with us any longer. Ted Demme was taken far too soon.
He was 38.
Yeah. So, I haven't seen Beautiful Girls in forever, but I do. But I was at a theater that played this, and I was constantly watching it when we had it. Continuing with the horror stuff that I was watching, since I've become a big fan of Pearl and X, I went to look at Ty West's earlier films, and he did another one called House of the Devil, which is an interesting horror movie. It's really interesting because I could probably reasonably tell you that nothing happens in this movie until the last 10-15 minutes. And does that mean that it's not worth watching, that this is just boring or anything like that? No, far from it, because the constant trying to figure out what's going on really drives this. And I feel like Ty West may have looked at this script, and it may have been a shorter thing at first. And this is only an hour and a half, but I get the sense that he's like, I don't want to tell people what's going on in this thing in midway, because if I tell you midway what's going on, what am I going to fill the rest of this movie with, basically? And that's how I think he ended up making this, because most movies, Hollywood movie, would not be made this way. Like a studio movie would not be made this way. They would tell you in the first 30 minutes, oh shit, this is what's going on in the house. Now, you can see the title, so you know kind of what's going on in the house. This is an actress by the name of Jocelyn Donahue, who I had not seen in anything before. She is about to rent an apartment that's like $300 a month or something like that. This is in 1983. She needs to get a job to pay for it. The real estate agent played by Dee Wallace is like, I will just let you have this apartment, without deposit or anything. And you remind me of my daughter and all this other stuff. So, okay. She still needs to get money for rent and all that. So she answers this ad for a babysitting job. And the guy on the other end of the line is played by Tom Noonan. And he does a lot of weird stuff at the beginning. Like she calls from a payphone about this job and leaves a message and then starts walking away. And then the payphone rings and it's him. And she's like, how'd you get this number? And he doesn't say anything. He just says, I need you to meet me at this place or whatever afterwards. And then we'll talk about the job. But then he like strangely stands her up and isn't there for the job interview or whatever. She talks about this with her friend played by Greta Gerwig, who's in this movie. Eventually, things come back around to the point where the guy calls her back and he wants her to be this babysitter. And she's like, okay. So Greta Gerwig's like, I'd like to come along with you and stay with you through this. It's like 4 hours of work. So they go out to this house way out into the country, and Tom Noonan basically drops the bomb that this isn't a babysitting job at all. This is a job to watch after my elderly mother, who you won't have to do anything for. She's just going to be up in her room. And you're just here if she needs something, and that's it. She probably won't even ask for anything. So it's really strange off the bat. Why would you do all of this? So this movie is a lot of Jocelyn Donahue walking around in the house and looking at stuff and being like, what is this house? We're just kind of walking through it, sitting down, trying to call people, trying to do all the stuff. And then finally the movie there is one thing. I don't want to spoil what happens. There is one thing that happens in this movie, but it's another one of those things. It happens about 30 to 40 minutes in the movie. And you're like, oh, holy crap. That just happened. And then you'll be spending the rest of the movie going, what was that? What was that all about? No. and it doesn't come back up until much later. It's a really interesting movie. I can't tell you that it's like, oh boy, this is the best horror movie I've ever seen in my life or anything. It's just, I think a lot of horror fans would love this. So, House of the Devil, Ty West, if you liked, if you were trying to get into a filmmaker who seems to be going places, this is one of his early ones.
That's awesome. Sounds good.
All right. Are we ready for the big recommend?
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
Biggie. Spontaneous. I adore this movie. It might be the single bloodiest movie that I adore. A lot of it rides on the shoulders of Catherine Langford, who plays Mara, the main character. And she's very winning right off the bat with her sarcastic.
Sorry, what? I think we should get this House of the Devil graphic off while we're talking about spontaneous. There we go.
Anyway, she opens with a pretty witty little narration that kind of rapidly guides you into her world as a student sitting in front of her in class explodes, spontaneously combusting, if you will. And it's a pretty overt metaphor for adolescence.
There's even a line in there somewhere where someone says, can we get to graduation before we explode?
Mm-hmm.
And I think hormonally, that is every teenager mm-hmm. in high school.
Yeah.
So this is taking that to a little extreme. And no one knows why she exploded. Her clothes didn't explode. just her body, her skin, and turned to a blood-ready pulp.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, this is very shocking and surprising, and everyone in town is concerned. But then another person explodes mm-hmm. at a football game.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually enough people explode that, like, the president knows what's going on, and the National Guard is on standby, what have you. But what we're really watching here is the coming-of-age slash love story between Mara and Dylan. Dylan is another kid in her class that, until this explosion, she's never noticed. She's never paid much attention to. But he likes her. He's got a crush on her. Because his fellow students are exploding now, he's like, well, what have I got to lose? I might be dead tomorrow. I might as well tell my crush that I like her. He does this anonymously at first by sending her pictures of people named Richard,
mm-hmm.
and calling them dick pics,
mm-hmm.
Which is funny. And also, way back 5-6 years ago, maybe even longer, I used to tweet dick pic mm-hmm. and then a picture of like Andy Dick or somebody. So
yeah,
that joke is close to my heart.
Yeah.
And then the next day, he goes to the cafe where she and her best friend are and just walks up and asks to join them. And through a few awkward exchanges, she realizes, oh, you're the dick pic guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really odd exchange that I love, where the best friend says, you sent her dick pics? And he goes, ooh, no, that would be gross. And Mara says, he sent me pictures of Richards. And the friend goes, that's even worse. And Dylan goes, why would that be worse? And they leave that moment alone and move on.
Mm-hmm.
She has taken some shrooms. She wants Dylan to hold her hair while she throws up in the bathroom. And that begins their meet cute.
Mm-hmm.
Which is perfect for a movie where people are exploding.
Yes.
And they start to flirt and get to know each other, end up at the football game, which you know she would normally not want to go to, and he would normally not want to go to, but they're making new choices in light of the explosions. And one of the players on the field, right on the edge of the field, explodes. Everybody freaks out, starts running. And eventually the kids end up essentially abducted by government agents,
mm-hmm.
and there's a really funny montage of them being interviewed, and they're forced to live in this tent, and it's quite a while. They even show a scene at one point where they're giving them Thanksgiving turkey. They're in there for weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
and her bond with Dylan only strengthens. And there's another funny montage of them taking pills as they try different cocktails of medicine to cure whatever this disease is that's causing teenagers at this one school to explode. It's humorous to me that the authorities treat this as a disease since it's so localized. It's clearly not being caused by a disease, and yet the movie ultimately says it is.
Mm-hmm.
They finally get a pill that works, and everybody's let free, and everybody's rejoicing, and she consummates her relationship with Dylan. She gives him a beautiful birthday present connected to his childhood memories. And everything's starting to look up. Her parents got a Christmas tree, which she loves. They give her a weed vape pen. And they're like, we know you smoke weed. You're terrible at hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
they make him go back to school. And sure enough, somebody explodes again, and in that particular scene, about half the people explode as they're running from whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's curious. I guess it's a natural human reaction to just take off running whenever something really scary is happening. But there seems to be a thought in their mind that we have to get away from the school to not explode, even though we've already seen somebody explode out in a country road in a truck at this point. So anyway... Eventually, and in a very shocking, sad moment, Dylan, her boyfriend, explodes in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie then does a pretty good depiction of trauma and depression. She turns into a zombie. She doesn't want to move. Her dad comes into her bedroom to ask if she's okay, and her blanket, which contains her inside of it, just slides off the bed and under the bed. Her friend comes to talk to her, and she won't open the door. She just lays under her bed for days and days and days at a time. When she finally does decide to join life again, so to speak, it's not a healthy version of joining life. She dives straight into alcoholism. There is a funny scene where she's making a cocktail, and you think she's just talking to the camera because she has done that several times. And then it turns around and shows she's making this cocktail for her dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she pulls it back from him and drinks it herself. And he says, I'm not prepared to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
The movie has a lot to say about a lot of things. And I think most of it lands. It has a lot to say about being a teenager, about love, about authority overstepping their bounds, about information being kept from people, about how hard it is to parent teenagers. That's why I love this movie so much. It is genre hopping so much, it manages to accomplish a half a dozen themes in a successful way. They decide to combine prom and graduation.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah.
And she goes there, and there's a hilarious scene where she starts pouring alcohol into the punch bowl and looks up, and there's two teachers right there. And they're like, are you kidding me? And she just stares them down while she pours the rest of the alcohol in there. And then she picks up the entire punch bowl and walks away to drink it herself. When she gets her degree, her diploma, she goes on an ill-advised apology rant, eventually blaming herself for being the curse that caused all these people to blow up, which, you know, she's not, but the students had come to believe that she might be the cause. She walks off stage. The very next girl getting her diploma says, no, it's my fault. I wasn't a good enough Christian. Mm-hmm. And that's why people are exploding.
Mm-hmm.
And Mara goes, boo, sit down, whore.
Yeah.
Catherine Langford is hysterical mm-hmm. in this movie.
Yeah, she is.
Eventually, she has a moment with Dylan's mom. It's a weird moment. They're laying on his grave. But she comes away from that determined to live life. Before that, her friend accuses her with a line that I love. She says, you just want to stop existing until you stop existing.
Mm-hmm.
When that's what she's describing her alcoholism, her zombie-like state. She just, you want to stop living before you stop living. She decides she's not going to do that. She is going to live her life. Maybe she will explode the next day. She doesn't know.
Yeah.
And eventually she and her friend decide to go live in this beach house together, which was their dream as little girls. And the first time I watched this movie, I really did expect her to explode.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the movie. Not because I wanted her to, but because it just felt like the kind of movie that might do that. I'm really glad she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because the main message of the movie is live your life. Live it. Like, you might stop existing tomorrow.
Yep.
And so if they had killed her at the end with an explosion, that might have been a quote-unquote funnier ending, but it would have undercut the message of the film. I have a lot more to say, but let's pause here and see what Chris thought this time through once he finally was able to get it on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that tonal shift is weird, right? Like, you either are going to really dig that, or you're going to be like, oh, but I loved all the funny stuff that was happening in the first hour and everything. And it's weird, right? Like, it's almost like it's easy to laugh and everything with when you have somebody to laugh with. She has her best friend and her boyfriend this entire time, is able to like laugh about all this because they're not exploded. They're, you know, right. They're perfectly fine. But then once it happens to one of them, it changes everything. And it kind of puts things in perspective. And I think it's an interesting choice because your movie's not going to be as fun as it was before then, but it is also exploring a different thing that you want to explore. So I've wrestled with whether or not it's a good choice. I think ultimately it is, just because it's just, it's one of those things where, like, I think it just shows what it's like, what you can, you're sitting there laughing and, you know, having a good time and sort of ignoring everybody else's misery, during this until it happens to you is sort of the thing that I get from that. But, yeah. There are so many moments in this. The first, when I first watched this, the thing that stood with me the most was Catherine Langford hissing at Dylan when he walks in. he walks in and he's telling the story about when he first sort of started getting a crush on her, and he noticed her as he walked into the classroom, and she's like turned around talking to her buddy, and then she comes and she turns around and sees him, and she does this, you know, and it's amazing. And then the scene that made me die laughing the most was after they get taken by the people in suits, they're in that like that cellophane tent and they're doing that E.T. Elliot E.T. and then they show the like the person who's overseeing this, and she's just kind of like looking at it like, you know, she's like, you guys are not taking this seriously, are you? Yeah, and I that part too, where so the one guy on the football player is the second guy to explode, and they've been doing this thing with their names where it's like, we love Cox, and then it's like they have their names on their back where they spell that out. And one of them explodes, and like later on at the assembly, the I guess the quarterback or whatever is like, he's like, he came out to us in middle school, and we were good with it because we're progressive like that.
and we're doing this for our bros.
Yeah, we're doing this for our bros. But yeah, Catherine Langford, we had seen her before in stuff like Knives Out and she's fine in Knives Out, but this is a true star making performance. And I was looking at the IMDb and I'm like, nobody seems to, either she's like going off and doing other stuff or doing plays or something like that, or Hollywood's just whiffing on putting her in as many things as possible right now, because I think this is like tone perfect performance on her part on this. So yeah, I really really liked this the first time. I super like it the second time. Yeah, this is really good stuff.
I love all the little jokes. Like the thing that sold me on the movie the first time I was watching it is early on, they go to the funeral for that first girl who died. And the crying dad peels off the stick figure decal off the back of his SUV where there's a stick figure for every member of his family. And I died. Mm-hmm. And then characters keep referring to that and saying, I always wondered what happened when somebody dies.
Yeah,
they actually pull one of those off. And it's so morbid. Mm-hmm. But even in the end, she's giving the monologue about, you know, the Big Bang happened for no reason, or maybe it was God, I don't know. But then a meteor hit the Earth at the exact worst possible spot, and it shows a T-Rex looking up, and he goes, fuck, man!
Yeah.
It's a movie, even after the tonal shift, the movie still has humor, like the making the cocktail and spiking the punch and the dinosaur. It's gallows humor at that point. After that switch,
even the drug dealers have their moments in this too. Like I thought it was funny where that she goes over to their house or trailer or whatever, and she's gonna buy all the drugs that they have, and like, and they're like, and she's, and the one girl's like, it's like, oh, we don't keep our stuff here. And it cuts immediately to them in the van. And she's like, we hide it.
There's a lot of awesome cuts. There's that one moment where the I can't tell if she's a teacher or an FBI, CIA lady, but she says to Mara, you know, prepare for the worst or hope for the best. And then it cuts to Mara saying to Dylan, prepare for the worst. Yeah. And it's a completely different scene.
Yeah.
But the dialogue bridges. There's a couple different moments where the movie does that. It's really confident. This is Brian Duffield mm-hmm. who made this. So he, as a writer, he wrote Underwater and Love and Monsters.
Yeah.
And he's had a couple screenplays that were on the blacklist, that Hollywood, you know, best 10 unproduced screenplays. They vote for that every year. So he's got a bright future as far as I'm concerned. I want to keep an eye on what he's doing. I don't think he directed all of those movies.
No, I don't think he did.
But anyway, I'm glad you enjoyed it even more the second time. Every time I watch it, it moves up my all-time ranking a little bit. I'm going to say something that's going to be contradicted in just a few minutes, but there's no movie like it. Of course.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, of course, you are charged this week with coming up with a double feature for it.
All right. One more thing before we get into the double feature. But one thing that I can't think the movie might have been able to do a little bit more of is to allow Tess, played by Haley Law, her best friend, to be a little bit more involved in that third act. And yeah, I know that Mara does all this stuff that, you know, makes that drives them apart. And that makes sense, but I kind of wished, considering since once Mara gets the boyfriend, she starts to get pushed into the background a little bit more, that she could have come back and been more of a saving grace. But that would have maybe undercut the great scene in that cemetery with Dylan's mom. So maybe it was the right choice to kind of push her aside, but I wanted to see her more in this, because she starts off strong in this too. Like, this is like a great best friend and everything, and then she kind of gets pushed to the side. So I was kind of hoping we'd see more.
She's great in the movie. She's, I think a lot of the performances are really outstanding, but she's really, you believe their friendship, you know, has lasted for years. It's, they both do a really good job. I'm looking at Brian Duffield, and his next movie in post-production is called No One Will Save You. And it stars Caitlin Dever. Mm. And the summary is, an exiled, anxiety-ridden homebody must battle an alien who's found its way into her home.
Of course. Yes.
So I'll be all over that whenever that comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Now, let's double feature this thing.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Okay, I'm seeing some really good choices in the comments, but I'm going to go with a pretty stark tonal shift on this one and go with a movie that Jeremy has mentioned on this podcast. The Fallout is what I would double feature this movie with. Jenna Ortega in a high school where there's been a mass shooting, and then you know, as the title suggests, the fallout from that, which is similar to what Mara goes through in this movie. I like that as a potential double feature. There's some great ones here in the comments. Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which has got that same kind of like comedy gore type of thing. Warm Bodies is another pretty good one. I would. Those are definitely great choices. So
The Fallout, it's such a gut punch of a movie. Jenna Ortega is a sudden star. Like, he went from nowhere on my radar to in like five movies everybody's raving about, and she looks awesome in this Wednesday Addams show that Tim Burton is doing.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why Catherine Langford isn't getting work. It's all going to Jenna Ortega. But I love that pick. I love The Fallout. It's not as funny.
No.
But definitely a great double feature.
Yeah. Good pick. All right.
Now we have to explain to the people what next week's homework is all about.
Oh, my God. All right, so there is a new album coming out from a buddy of ours. You have heard some of his tunes on the beginning of this podcast and on our last podcast. And they're coming, and he and Solomon Brigham are coming out with Marlowe 3 in, what is it, a week or two? It's a week from the time this gets, I think, yeah, this gets published, like the, maybe?
Yeah, it's late October, October 20-something. So you can already pre-order it.
So it's LaRange and Solomon Brigham will be here to... we're going to interview them about the album, of course, and we're going to recommend that because the first two Marlowes are amazing.
And the first single off this one called Past Life is one of the best songs I've ever heard in my life.
Absolutely. So looking forward to that. Now, we gave them the opportunity to give you next week's homework, and Solomon Brigham himself has recommended Leprechaun 3.
Okay, so I said we're doing horror movies this month. And so what one of you guys want to recommend a horror movie, and LaRange said, well, you know, Solomon really loves horror. I'm not as into it, so I'll let him pick. He'll probably choose one of the Leprechaun movies. And then, like, 10 minutes later, he was like, yep, chose Leprechaun 3, the one in Las Vegas.
Yes, yes. And so, I don't know anything. I've seen the first Leprechaun, and that's it. I am excited to watch Leprechaun 3. I mean, look, even if it's bad, I think we're going to have fun with this. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have an interesting show next week. We're going to be interviewing them, and we're going to be big recommending Leprechaun 3. At least, you know what? What's going to happen is we're going to let Solomon speak for himself on this one. And if I don't like it, it doesn't matter. We're going to let his excitement of this movie come through, and he'll explain why he loves this so much. So, I'm looking forward to this like you can't believe.
Me too. And you people need to know, according to the internet, this movie is on Peacock. So if you have Peacock, you won't have to pay to rent it. It is available to rent on all the major streaming services. I don't think you need to watch the first two. I saw that one asked over in the comments.
Yeah. Although I am personally probably going to watch part two just before I watch this.
I will probably not. I want the randomness of. I saw the first Leprechaun 20 years ago, so I don't.
You
even
know
remember
what? You're
it,
right. But. I probably won't watch two, so that I can just get right into this. And if there's something that was explained in the first two, screw it.
Screw it. Solomon can explain it.
Yeah, exactly. So, man. So that's how we'll go about that.
It's gonna be so much fun.
Anyway, are we ready for some questions?
Let's do some questions.
Mm-hmm. Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
Sorry if spoilers, Apathy says, but Jennifer Aniston does not show back.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't expect that she did. All right, questions. A recent question asked about things in movies that bother you because you are an expert or well-versed in them. Flip it around and give us movies that did a great job portraying something obscure that you are well-versed in or an expert in.
I would consider movie projection to be obscure enough that, you know, to see it in movies is going to be a rare thing. It's always fun when a movie gets into a projection booth, like Inglourious Basterds did, and like Fight Club did, and everything. But if you want to see a love letter to movie projection, it's Cinema Paradiso. It was a foreign language film winner in 1988, 87, 86, somewhere around there. It's a great movie, but it also like goes through a lot of different like projection things in it. I'm not even familiar with this kind of projection that they're doing back in this day. Like, I wasn't a big, I did a reel to reel one time in my life, and it wasn't even a true one that they did back in the day. But them running the nitrate film, which you're going to be very familiar with from Inglourious Basterds, they're running nitrate film in Cinema Paradiso. Stuff like that. But just see, like, there's parts in there where the guy, the main projectionist is loses his eyesight, and he's up in the projection booth, and the kid who's been up there like training with him or just learning stuff by watching him has started a movie up, and the main projectionist guy's like, it's out of focus. And he's like, and the guy looks out there and he's like, and sure enough, it's blurry on the screen. He's like, how did you know that? He's like, well, it's something about how the film is moving. You know, he's basically saying that yeah. Cinema Paradiso is fantastic. I would just recommend it on in general, but that's the answer to my question.
No, that's a great movie. I love that movie. This is not my answer. I had Hot Tub Time Machine on yesterday as I was doing shit on the computer. And the scene near the end where Craig Robinson plays, let's get it started in here. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of that group.
Black
Eyed Peas.
Yeah, Black Eyed Peas. Like, geez, that should have been easy.
And there's just the guys behind him, quote unquote, playing the guitar. There's no care given whatsoever to even remotely look like they're playing the guitar, which is maybe in that movie intentional. I could buy that. But I've always been really impressed with the four main actors in That Thing You Do, because at Tom Hanks's request, they all went to like a 2 or 3 month musical instrument boot camp so that they could look authentic while playing these instruments that their characters play. And I think it pays off. I think in the movie, you believe pretty rapidly that Steve Zahn is playing that guitar because he is. He's making the right chords. He's strumming on the right downbeats. And so anybody that ever does anything like that, like Ryan Gosling learning to play for La La Land for that really complicated piano piece, that stuff always stands out to me because I play musical instruments and it's often, almost always, lazily done.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm not even a instrument guy. I've only played briefly on some instruments in my life, but you can tell a lot of times they're not playing some of that crap. Yeah. So
any good answers to that question in the comments?
No.
Mr. Robot does a good job showing actual coding and not your typical
There's one higher up. Jet Smet says that Talladega Nights has more realistic racing in it than Days of Thunder. And then gives another comment to say Days of Thunder sucks. Yeah, yeah, it does. It does indeed. JC says, I'm trying to think of a good example. Chernobyl comes to mind, as while I'm not an expert on nuclear reactors, it does a great job with the gravity of the situation. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Let's move on to another question. What movie which had a change of director would you most like to see the original director's image of it? Conversely, what movie with the change of director are you most thankful had that change of director?
No surprise here. I want to see Edgar Wright's Ant-Man. The Ant-Man we got is totally fine, but just want to see Edgar. I want to see the movie that they had creative differences over, for Edgar Wright to make that movie.
Like, we're spending our time online. We got movie fans trying to get the Ayer cut of the Suicide Squad. And we should be directing our efforts at getting the Edgar Wright cut of Ant-Man. I mean, that would be a much more worthy addition to the overall art on the planet.
JC is mentioning here, I actually looked this up, Jaws was supposed to be directed by Dick Richards until he talked about the creature being a whale. The director for Jaws kept referring to the shark as a whale all the way through it, and the producers were like, okay, we're not gonna have you on this project anymore. And then they hired Spielberg, who had just come off of the Sugarland Express, and the rest is movie history, obviously.
Movie magic history.
And also Ratatouille didn't have a director for a while, just had a couple of guys kind of like shepherding the project, and Pixar sort of like didn't like the direction everything was going, so then they hired Brad Bird.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. Turned it into one of the best movies Pixar ever made. Mm-hmm. Yep. I've already seen this a couple times in the comments, but my answer is Lord Miller's Han Solo movie.
Yeah, me too.
It still blows my mind that that movie is a Ron Howard movie.
Yeah, no.
I like Solo, I think, a good deal more than the average fan. Mm-hmm. But I still want to see their version of it. And I don't know if they were going too broad with the comedy or what. And we'll never know.
They were that, from what I understand, it was supposed to be like 21 Jump Street comedy, basically.
I see.
That's why they were so hesitant to. Well, that's why they just fired them and said, "Look, we're just not. We can't do a Solo movie this way." Now, in retrospect, the way that movie performed, don't you kind of want to see what the Lord and Miller version is? Because, you know, I know a lot of people. I mean, I know some people like segments of that Solo movie, and like you said, you like it better than most people. And I think that's the way Star Wars movies should kind of, like, the direction a lot of Star Wars movies should go, is this type of story. But yeah, it would have been. I think it would have been better if it was Lord Miller just having a good old raucous comedy time with it. What? There's no harm in doing that. You have the Star Wars IP. If that doesn't work, then you do another one later and say that didn't exist. That's what you do all the time.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Fuck. Fuck. Good answers in the comments. Mm-hmm. I see Slab wishing he could watch Kubrick's AI. I'm on that boat.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely.
It wasn't really a director change by choice. But I like AI a lot more than most people probably do.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we see in here that is worth throwing out there?
Let's see. Somebody says Mrs. Doubtfire NC-17 cut. Yeah, sure. Brave before John Lasseter replaced Brenda Chapman with Pixar vet Mark Andrews. Yeah, because Brenda Chapman's the one who wrote that story, and it was about her and her experiences with her own daughter, and somehow Pixar didn't like where she was going with it, and so they just hired some dude to direct this movie about, you know, mother and daughter in it. Let's see. And Bryan Singer was on Bohemian Rhapsody. Apparently started not showing up and stuff like that, but I didn't like Bohemian Rhapsody anyway, so I don't even know if I'd like the Bryan Singer version. So maybe I would like to see that version. Maybe I'd just rather him not work anymore.
Me too. Oh, Tarantino's Star Trek, that's a good answer. We'll never see that.
Yeah, fun. I know, that'd be great.
All right, let's do another question.
All right,
What are two properties that should be in the same universe but aren't, such as The Boys and Firestarter? Both have people or kids injected with something to gain powers.
Okay, so I got a couple of answers for this. Toy Story and Child's Play.
Ooh.
And in general, I mean, if you've got a Sid in Toy Story who's doing all this fucked up stuff to his toys, then you're definitely gonna have a Chucky somewhere. These eras are not too far behind each other, or one of them is not too far behind the other. The Prestige and The Illusionist. Both of those movies came out the same year. And I think The Illusionist had just as much critical acclaim, although I like The Prestige a lot more than I like The Illusionist. But just think about, like, getting Edward Norton in on this Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman stuff, man. I mean, obviously The Prestige ends in a certain way where you may not be able to. Well, you actually still have two people. You have two people who are still alive. No, I guess. I mean, Jackman could have a clone. That's how you could get him. That's how you could get him.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, that'd be fun.
I went back to my youth in the 80s and television shows, and I always, as a kid, felt like Knight Rider and MacGyver
should be
working for the same organization. They both work for a nonprofit crime-fighting organization somehow, the Knight Foundation and the Phoenix Foundation. And they do similar stuff, you know. Michael Knight would be more of the hammer, and MacGyver would be more of the pen, and they both approach problems from different ways, but in my mind as a kid, they belonged in the same universe. Now I want to see it even more.
Yeah,
said it out loud.
Over here we got Apathy says, "Oh brother, where art thou?" And Better Call Saul for the McGill family line. Slab says 21 Jump Street and Lethal Weapon. Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
Shaggy says Matrix and Lawnmower Man. Absolutely. Absolutely. Slab also says The Net and Hackers, for sure. Yeah.
Ooh.
especially getting all that outdated 90s The Net stuff in there with the woman from the bus. JC says trolley, pretty trolley here. Days of Thunder and Talladega Nights. Nolan says Knives Out and Sherlock Holmes would be cool. Absolutely. Another Matrix, cool. Matrix and Virtuosity. Yeah, for sure. We might as well throw Disclosure in all of this too.
I love Virtuosity so much.
Knight Rider and Transformers. Yeah. Independence Day and Top Gun Maverick. Yeah.
Nice.
Harry nice. Potter and Hot Fuzz. Johnny Mnemonic and Virtuosity. Really, you could do a whole lot of like really cool 90s sci-fi combos.
Yeah, you
in
could.
All of this. So The Matrix and Tron is another one I'm seeing on here. So that question got all lively and stuff. And
it did.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to do it for this week, guys. Leprechaun 3 is on Peacock. You have 1 week to watch it and be part of the conversation that I'm sure will be memorable as all hell.
Yep, absolutely. This is going to be a memorable episode for sure. All right, guys. Well, that'll do it. I'm glad that all of you guys could show up and talk to us today. And so we'll see you next week. See ya. Bye. Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
What's up? How is the pumpkins?
Was good. It's better than they had been the last couple of times.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if they're just better musicians now. It's been years, but I've seen them twice recently. One Bridgestone show a few years ago, and then one at Ascend. And it always seemed like he was rushing through all the hit songs. Like, let's play this hit song. All right. So you heard tonight, let's go. And, then like, you know, the newer stuff, they would play. And I was like, I really like this. I don't know this song as well, but he's obviously playing it with more passion than he's playing the old stuff. Last night, it seemed like he just leaned into all that old stuff and said, you know, I don't know if he's just a happier person now or what, or if they're just a better band, but it was really good. Really good.
I went to this craft fair with my wife over the weekend, and we did not know Vanderbilt had a football game.
Oh.
Craft fair is at Centennial Park. We did not know Vanderbilt had a football game and that it was alumni weekend, and that they had apparently not been able to hold alumni weekend for the previous 2 years. So we planned to go to Ted's Montana Grill right there, kind of catty corner from the park. And we walked in, and there's like 30 people waiting for a table. Mm-hmm. So we're like, all right, there's a bunch of restaurants down. If we just walk towards the park, we'll find something. Mm-hmm. And we ended up at this brunchy place in the same strip that has P.F. Chang's at the end and mm-hmm. Fleming's up top. There's some kind of brunchy place there. It was really good food, by the way. But packed to the gills with college students, and they looked like infants. Like, mm-hmm. the college students of today, this is just a sign of how old I am. They yeah. look like young high school kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't, it's hard for my brain to wrap around that. Did we look that young mm-hmm. when we were in college?
We sure
my
did.
Goodness.
We sure did. That's you look wild. At you look at pictures from the era that when you were a college kid, you know? Yeah, you look like that. You look like a baby. Well, there probably are some, you know, prodigies out there who are like 8 years old going to Vanderbilt.
Oh, man. I'm excited about tonight. I'm going to have some food.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be rude. When does baseball start again?
Today.
When's the next...
Starts literally after we get off of this program, and it'll be Braves Phillies.
Ooh, I bet I know what you're doing after we get off this program. We just gave away a Future Sins video, but I guess that's not a huge surprise.
Yeah, although we don't actually have to put that part in there. Hint, hint.
That's true,
Jonathan.
We have the power. Oh man, that Titans game was close.
Yeah,
it was scary.
It sucked. I mean, I don't understand. They won, but it sucked.
It's weird. No, like, a lot of teams I expected to be really strong, like the Colts and the Titans, are not quite there yet. Colts are further away than the Titans are.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got teams like the Eagles and the Giants that are, like, really good that I thought we were expecting to suck.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this probably happens every year.
I don't know. Eagles may have been... pick to be good when they got AJ Brown and
oh that's right
all that but Giants definitely weren't because you know no, there's nothing that they showed and look again we're five games into the season so many teams are like a play away from being winless and they're the top teams in the league so yeah. You know it's one of those things. There's some teams you can see are clearly the best right now, but you know we'll really know in the next few weeks. Like who are the teams that we really have to worry about? Looks like Kansas City and Buffalo are still great.
Yeah, yeah. The Rams still look pretty good to me.
Yeah, they're sucking though this year. The Rams.
They haven't won much, right?
I think they're 2-3.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got destroyed by Buffalo, and they've dropped a couple of games they shouldn't have, and I don't know. I don't know what to make of that team either.
Football, man.
Mm-hmm.
Can't live with it. Can't escape it. I can't believe we're going to... watch Leprechaun 3.
I know. It's almost like Solemn is trolling us on this.
That's not the vibe I get at all. Like before Austin even checked with him, he was like, I bet he's gonna pick one of the Leprechaun movies.
Oh my god. Well, who knows? We may have a lot of fun with that, so
I mean, listen, I love the Wrong Turn franchise, and I don't think it could be that much better mm-hmm. than the Leprechaun franchise. I've seen whichever Leprechaun movie Jennifer Aniston's in because we rented it in college.
Yeah, it's the first one. I've seen the first one, and I didn't like it at all. I'm kind of surprised it even made it to sequels, I bet I don't have to see Leprechaun 2 to appreciate Leprechaun 3, but I may watch it.
I don't know, man. I'm probably, I don't know. I think it might be more fun to go in cold. Like, this one apparently goes to Las Vegas.
Okay. All right. Is there a leprechaun in space? Or is it, do we know if he's made that?
I'll find the answer to that question.
I think he has.
Leprechaun movies. Oh, Lord, there's at least six of them. Oh, wait, more. Okay, holy shit. Yeah. Leprechaun 4 in space.
Four.
After that came Leprechaun in the Hood.
Okay.
Then Leprechaun Back to the Hood.
Oh.
Then Leprechaun Origins. Then Leprechaun Returns.
Holy
there's eight of these
shit.
Movies.
See, now I've got a Leprechaun collection. I don't know if it has all of those.
The last two I named are pretty recent, 2014 and 2018. So those two were both made after we started making YouTube videos.
I may during the 3-minute countdown go and get that Leprechaun collection and see what I got on it.
I love discovering this kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would have guessed maybe they made 4. But they've made 8.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because they're probably really cheap to make. And then they just easily get that money back, at least get the money back, and then if not, make a profit, you know. So, imagine being in that kind of business, owning an IP that's, like, not a Marvel property, but it still puts people in big houses and, you know, gives them a great living. You know, you go to some producer's house in California, and he's like, yeah, produce the Leprechaun movies. It's like, dude, this is huge. This is like 5 times bigger than my house. Yeah, I know. You know, there's like millions of people who are just like, you know, going around like, hey, would you like to contribute 50 grand to my movie? And there's somebody like, yeah, I got 50 grand lying around.
go do movie stuff.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Wait a minute. All you right, can hire Michael Biehn for this? Hell yeah, I'll give you $100,000.